Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Quick Hits, Season of Warmth. Jesus House has scheduled a season of warmth from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday at the Jesus House of Odessa, 1335 East 6th Street. Free backpacks will be loaded with goodies to anyone in need, and a free enchilada meal will be served as well. Faith Temple Fellowship Pastor Donnie Kiker said this event is a way of telling the community thanks for all the help during the year. Anybody that comes not only gets a full Mexican meal, but they also get a backpack, Kiker said. Free Thanksgiving meal. Curbside Bistro, 3816 Andrews Highway, will be giving away free Thanksgiving meal at 11 a.m. Thursday. Visit tinyurl.com/27AD99W9. City of Odessa offices. The City of Odessa offices will be closed Thursday and Friday in observance of Thanksgiving. Trash will not be picked up on Thursday and Friday. Trash schedule. Today, regular service. Wednesday through Friday, rollout carts will be serviced on Wednesday. Thursday, city offices closed. Friday, city offices closed. Residential brown dumpsters will be serviced once. Apartments and commercial will be serviced twice. The household hazards will be closed Saturday. To avoid overflowing accumulation of trash and debris in dumpsters, citizens are asked to recycle items at the Odessa Recycle Center, 816 West 42nd Street. Drop-off windows for cardboard, plastic, paper, aluminum, and tin cans are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For complete recycling information, visit odessa-tx.gov/492/recycling-center. Trash, debris, and bulky items piled next to the alley dumpster is illegal and prevents the solid waste trucks from being able to pick up the containers when service resumes. During the holiday period, city trash receptacles should be reserved for perishable items only. For more information, email Martha Cortazar, Communications Specialist. mcortazar@odessa-tx.gov. Turkey Trot 10K, 5K, and Kids Fun Run. Midland County Greater Works has scheduled the 10th annual Turkey Trot 10K, 5K, and Kids Fun Run from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. November 25th at 2001 West Cuthbert Avenue, Midland. To register or for more information, call 432-694-2501 or visit MidlandTurkeyTrot.com. Concerts. The Hacienda Event Center, 12160 Texas 191 Frontage Road, Midland, has scheduled the following events. November 25th, Barruco. December 11th, Eslabon Armado y Los Anchando. January 14th, 2022, Camela y Carla, Brucon y Vidado Especial El Chaparro Chuchanaga. January 21st, Gerardo Ortiz La Adictiva, La Fiera de Okinaga y Impacto Sinalons. February 11th, Jay Wheeler. February 18th, Luis R. Conriguez, Los Huracanes del Norte y Los Rayaleros del Norte. February 25th, Duelo de Acordeons. March 31st, Ricardo Arjona Blanco y Negro Tour. For event times and tickets, visit HaciendaMidland.com. Kids Clown Contest. The Sandhills Stock Show Rodeo are taking entries for Kids Clown Contest for ages 10 and under through December 15th. Parents, send a photo and video of your clown dressed to impress. SSSR will choose the top four entries to perform opening night. The stock show and rodeo will take place January 5th through 15th, 2022 at the Ector County Coliseum. For more information, call 432-366-3951. Email sandhillsrodeo@cableone.net or visit sandhillssssr.com or tinyurl.com/drzz38. November 26th, production. The Midland Community Theater, 2000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, has scheduled Peter and the Starcatchers at 7:30 p.m. Friday and 2:30 p.m. Saturdays through December 11th. For tickets or information, visit www.mctmidland.org. November 27th, concert. Live concert featuring Slim Thug, Baby Bash, Frankie J, Crystal Poppins, and G.T. Garza will take place November 27th at the Far West Event Center, 5850 West University Boulevard. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the show starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at tinyurl.com/8r4snmc. Contact Sombrero Music on Facebook and or Instagram for more details. November 28th, Food Drive. Synergy Entertainment Group has scheduled its annual Thanksgiving Food Drive that benefits local food banks. People will be able to receive a free $5 game card or free popcorn in exchange for 2 cans of food. Limit 2 offers per person. Guests can drop off the cans at Synergy locations through November 28th. Visit synergy.com. Odessa Regional Medical Center to administer pediatric COVID-19 vaccines. In line with guidance from the FDA and CDC, Odessa Regional Medical Center, ORMC, is offering first and second doses, boosters, and pediatric doses of the COVID-19 vaccine starting November 17th at the Community Health Center, CHC, at ORMC. The Community Health Center is located at 520 East 6th Street on the floor of 5th, between Muskingum and Tom Green. The CDC's hours are as follows: Tuesday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. No lunch closure this day. Thursday, closed. Friday, closed. CHC is closed from noon to 1 p.m. daily, beginning November 29th, Monday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Tuesday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., Thursday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. CHC is closed from noon to 1 p.m. daily. Visit www.odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/vaccine to view the CHC's holiday hours. It's been such an honor to take care of our COVID patients again this year. Being able to have my entire family now vaccinated and safe and protected means a lot to me, said Crystal Renteria, COVID-19 CCU nurse at Odessa Regional Medical Center, whose son received the first pediatric COVID-19 vaccine at ORMC. I feel 100% more comfortable knowing my family is safe. Vaccines will be offered while supplies last for individuals ages 5 and up. For more information on the COVID-19 vaccine, visit www.odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/vaccine. Council to consider purchase of refuse trucks. The Odessa City Council is scheduled to meet at 6 p.m. today at the City Council Chambers, 411 West 8th Street, in the Council Chambers, to consider, among other things, the purchase of new trash trucks. On the consent agenda, consider approval of the request by Wiley and Fredna Brown Family Partners, LTD, and All Nations Bridge of Hope, Incorporated, owners LCA agents, for various original zoning and rezoning requests to Retail R and Retail 1 R1, 3.63 acres total, located in Section 4, Block 41, T2S, TNPRR, County Survey, City of Odessa, Ector County, Texas, southeast intersection of P. Bar Ranch Road and North Fadre Road. Ordinance second and final approval. Consider having one city council meeting for the month of December 2021 resolution. Consider purchase of two automated side load refuse trucks for $762,914. Consider purchase of three side load refuse trucks for solid waste for $836,019. In other council actions, open a public hearing to consider approval of the requests by Roger Gearhart, lessee Torrentinos Incorporated owner, for a specific use permit to allow a dance hall in a retail R zoning district on Lot 43, Unit 3A and 2.68% interest in common area, Block 13, Wedgewood, 1541 John Ben Shepherd Parkway, Suite 18, Ordinance First Approval. Consider changes to modify Section 12-2-5, One-Way Streets and Alleys, of the City Code of Ordinances, First Approval. Consider approval of a professional services agreement with Newton Engineering, PC, for the design of 31st Street and Tanglewood Lane roadway constructions. Consider approval of a professional services agreement with Landgraf, Kutcher and Associates, Incorporated, LCA, for the design of Crane Avenue reconstruction.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Odessa American. Obituaries and death notices for Wednesday. Howard Lee Morrow, 92, of Odessa, passed away November 19th in Llano, Texas. Viewing will be 9 a.m. Wednesday, November 24th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, followed by graveside services at 11 a.m. with Pastor Paul Thompson officiating. Howard was born in El Paso on July 14th, 1929, to Julia Rackards and Willie Morrow. He was preceded in death by his wife Lily Faye McDonald. His surviving children are Mike Morrow from Ruidosa, New Mexico, Christy Lee Alexander and son-in-law Brian Alexander from Llano, and Pat Neal and son-in-law Bill Neal from Odessa. He had 10 grandchildren and 17 great-grandchildren. To send condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Charles Ray Terrell, 85, of Odessa, died Wednesday, November 17th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. on Tuesday, November 23rd, at Crescent Park Baptist Church. Graveside services with military honors will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Directors of Odessa. Isaac Antonio Ramirez, 23, of Odessa, died Saturday, November 20th in Midland. Celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. Wednesday, November 24th, at Martinez Funeral Home. Burial will follow at a later date. Pastor Carlos Rodriguez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, November 23rd, 2021, Education section. Former Homecoming Queen Becomes Judge by Rebecca Bell. When Michelle Van Stavern was nominated for Midland College Homecoming Queen in 1999, she wrote in her bio that she wanted to be a judge. In June 2021, 43-year-old Van Stavern realized her goal. She is now Justice of the Peace for Precinct 1 in Kendall County. When I was growing up, I had a friend whose mother was a municipal court judge. I guess that's what put the thought in my mind that I wanted to be a judge as well. I took a long route getting here, but it's been a great ride. She spent her early years in Vernal, Utah, and later moved to Wyoming with her family when she was in high school. The summer after high school graduation, she traveled to Midland to help care for her aunt's sons. I thought my move to West Texas would be just temporary, but I really liked it, so I started taking classes at Midland College. I attended classes and worked part-time as a clerk in the office of the Vice President of Instruction. The college president's office was right across the hall, and one day the president of student government, a guy named McCall, was visiting with the MC president, who at that time was Dr. David Daniel. I guess Dr. Daniel was somewhat of a matchmaker because he came out of his office and told me that I needed to meet McCall. So I did what he told me, and now McCall and I have been married for 20 years and have 3 children. While at Midland College, Michelle was active in the Latin American Student Association and also facilitated teen court on Monday evenings. She claimed that the teen court experience was another instigator of her desire to be a judge. In May 1999, she graduated from Midland College with an Associate of Applied Science degree in Criminal Justice and transferred to Texas Tech. My original thought was that I would transfer to a college in my home state of Utah, but I followed McCall to Texas Tech instead. The couple eventually moved to Amarillo and then Dallas. After their first 2 children were born, they moved back to Midland, and Michelle went to work for the Midland County Sheriff's Office. After her 3rd child was born, she resigned from the sheriff's office and worked part-time for the Midland College Police Department as a dispatcher. Midland College needed more licensed police officers, so they sponsored me to go through the police academy and obtain my Texas law enforcement license. While working at Midland College, I was assigned to the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force in Midland. Every other Thursday, I would report to the federal courthouse and help the marshal's office, mainly serving warrants. I then worked for the MC Police Department for 2 years and then went back to the sheriff's office as a crime scene investigator. In 2015, McCall's job took the family to San Antonio area, and they settled in the nearby town of Burney. In February 2016, Michelle accepted a position as a patrol officer with the Burney Police Department. She also completed online bachelor's degree in judicial administration from Wayland Baptist University. I worked nights during my first 2 years as a patrol officer in Burney because that way I could be home in time to get the kids to school and pick them up in the afternoon, she explained. The schedule worked great during the school year. I would sleep during the day while everyone was gone. However, summer breaks and school holidays were a little tough. I remember not getting much sleep during those times. In 2018, Van Stavern transferred within the Burney Police Department and became a school resource officer. This gave her an opportunity to have the same hours as her children. Then one evening, when she was directing traffic after a high school football game, she was hit by a drunk driver and suffered several broken bones, including a wrist, elbow, and 4 ribs. She also had traumatic brain injury, a laceration on her left arm that was cut through her tendons, and a torn bicep. Due to massive blood loss, she went into hypovolemia shock and received blood transfusions. Although she still has scars and a bum wrist, just 10 weeks after the accident, she resumed her studies and received the Burney Police Department's Fit for Duty Award in 2020 and in 2021. She currently runs 3 miles every morning. This past spring, Van Stavern applied to assume the remaining term of the vacant Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace position in Kendall County. I wasn't going to apply, but my coworkers and friends kept encouraging me to do it. I figured I might as well go ahead. Being a judge has been a lifelong dream, so I might as well make that dream come a reality. In June, she resigned her position with the Burney Police Department and began her current responsibilities as Kendall County Judge and Justice of the Peace. The funny thing is that my family was excited about getting rid of the police radio that would constantly go off day and night, she said. However, my first day as a judge, I was given a police radio and told that I would need it, so we still have a radio in the house. In her current responsibilities, she is responsible for overseeing the daily activities of the Kendall County Courthouse, the second oldest running courthouse structure in Texas. She said her hours run anywhere from 40 to 50 hours a week and include responding to deaths in the precinct and determining if they are the result of suspicious cause and whether or not an autopsy needs to be ordered. She is also responsible for hearing small claims cases, anything from $1 to $25,000, eviction cases, debt claims, and bench trials, such as traffic citations that are pled as not guilty. She is one of four justices in the county, and two have been in their respective positions for over 30 years. I don't have the years of experience like the other judges, but my experience in law enforcement definitely helps. She and the other three justices take turns being at the jail in the mornings to magistrate the inmates and set bonds or bail. Her experience working in the Midland County Jail when she worked for the sheriff's office has served her well in this capacity. In her spare time, she enjoys watching football with McCall and their children, Shay, who is in her first year at Texas Tech, Christina, who is in the 10th grade, and Ray, who is a 5th grader. She also enjoys watching her children's sports games. This past year, her son Ray started taking jiu-jitsu lessons, and Van Stavern draws upon her experience teaching defensive tactics for the Burney Police Department to help him. Van Stavern said that she would like to continue serving as a justice in Kendall County and is looking forward to her upcoming campaign. Her appointment term will expire on December 31st, 2022. She is a hard worker and is determined and persistent, Richard McKee, Midland College Police Chief, said. To steal a quote from Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson, she is the kind of person who, when her feet touch the ground in the morning, the devil says, "Oh crap, she's up." I've enjoyed working with her and watching her career progress. Lions Club names winners of poster contest. Midland Northside Lions Club recently sponsored the 33rd Annual Lions International Peace Poster Contest at Goddard Junior High, Bowie Fine Arts Academy, Bynum School, St. Anne's School, and Trinity. The theme of the contest was "We Are All Connected." The winners were Melanie Sandoval, Sally, first, Madison Huddleston, and Alisa Wood at Goddard, Angel Patel, Juan Hasholan, and Hudson Gross at Trinity, Michaela Pays, Abigail Urbina, and Kaylin Babb at St. Anne's, Kathleen Gayton, Candace Horton, and Trenton Massey at Bowie, Nathaniel Nieto, Sophie Borner, and Chris Williams at Bynum. Maximizing the Workforce Potential of Texas's Community College Systems by Glenn Hamer and A.J. Rodriguez. The Texas economy has been declared open again after the pandemic, but many employers and customers seeking timely service or goods are learning that we need more skilled people in the workforce to lead us back to a fully robust economy. The good news is Texas has the people. Our state grew by 4 million over the last decade, bringing our population to 29 million, and we could see nearly 9 million more Texans living here by 2036, when the state turns 200. The question now is, how will we prepare this growing population to contribute to our state's prosperity, particularly given automation technologies and other disruptions that will impact future workforce needs? Our answer is Texas Community Colleges. Texas has over 50 two-year community colleges with campuses across the state. More than 660,000 Texans are currently enrolled in classes to attain the skills and credentials needed for immediate jobs or build toward four-year bachelor's degrees. Community colleges help upskill and reskill Texas workers and are open to any Texan. In advance of the 2023 legislative session, what many are hoping will become a workforce session, it is essential to look at community colleges' role in workforce development. It is also crucial that we examine why we place last among large states in the percentage of our population with post-secondary credentials. To accomplish this, the Texas legislature established the Commission on Community College Finance, which held its first hearings in mid-November. Its mission is to craft recommendations for a legislature to establish a state funding formula and appropriate funding levels to sustain viable community college education and training programs throughout the state. The mission should also include looking at how Texas community colleges can partner with high schools, employers, and four-year colleges to build career pathways that lead to good-paying jobs. The commission should also evaluate the availability and kinds of courses offered to Texas students. Not surprisingly, Texans agree. In August, Texas 2036 polled voters and found that almost 9 out of 10 Texas voters wanted community colleges to focus on offering course programs that match the needs of the local workforce. And 7 out of 10 thought the state should link community college funding levels to whether students find good-paying jobs after completing their educational program. Better workforce alignment isn't just necessary, it's popular, and it's a smart financial investment. Each year, Texas spends more than $5.5 billion on community colleges, including almost $1 billion from students themselves, $1.3 billion from the federal government, and $3.4 billion from Texas taxpayers through general funds and designated property tax collections. Given Texas's need to develop a workforce for the future and close the gaps that impede students' ability to succeed in the 21st century economy, this investment is essential. By 2036, 71% of all jobs in Texas will require a post-secondary credential, but only 32% of high school graduates currently earn such a credential within 6 years of completing high school. And Texas' outlook is off track, as the state is lagging behind the progress needed to reach its goal of having 60% of 25 to 34-year-olds earn a degree or credential by 2030. Community colleges are an important means to address these challenges and ensure that every Texan has an opportunity to achieve success. The Texas Commission on Community College Finance provides a critical opportunity to address these challenges, and engaging the business community in this process will provide more Texans with the post-secondary credentials needed to compete for good jobs. Midland College awarded two professors with the Dr. Stan Jacobs Teaching Excellence Award at a ceremony and celebration of teaching in the Scarber Student Center Carrasco Room. Thanks to a generous endowment started by Jacobs, retired Associate Vice President of Instruction, Betty Clements and Norman Cremens each received a cash award, and their name will be inscribed on a plaque in the PV House Administration Building. Clements is Professor and Department Chair of Communications. Cremens is Professor of Automotive Technology and Diesel Technology. The Teaching Excellence Awards are a standing tradition at Midland College, an institution that prides itself on quality teaching and a superior faculty. In fact, current MC President Steve Thomas won the award twice when he taught psychology courses at the college in the 1980s. "The core foundation of Midland College is teaching and learning," Thomas said. "MC is one of the best community colleges in the state because of our outstanding faculty." This year, the award name was changed to the Dr. Stan Jacobs Teaching Excellence Award to recognize Jacobs' gifts to the college, which increased the award amount from $1,500 to $5,000. As he celebrates 50 years of teaching and as MC celebrates its 50th anniversary in 2022, Jacobs decided it was a perfect time to start this endowment. Teaching excellence is important to any institution you feel a part of, and I feel a part of MC. What better investment is there than one in the health of the institution like MC? As he looked back on his life, Jacob said he is most proud of his tenure. He'd never dreamed he would be at the college for 50 years. The college kept growing and good things kept happening, so I never thought of leaving. Each year, two faculty, one from academic transfer programs and one from career technical programs, receive the award, which is given to professors who have made significant contributions to the intellectual life of the college through innovation in the classroom and commitment to students. Trinity welcomes Manor Park residents for glassblowing and musical performance. Trinity School welcomed residents from Manor Park last week and treated them to a glassblowing demonstration with guest artist Reed Jacobs, along with a performance of excerpts from the upper school production of Little Women, the Broadway musical. The Trinity School Visual Arts Department created a glassblowing mobile studio, the Glass Hopper, to share the art of glassblowing with the community. The Glass Hopper provides students with unique lessons in dependability, forgiveness, trust, and adaptability that build on the foundation of servant leadership and inspires them to radiate that value into the community. We are always thrilled to share the Glass Hopper with the community and enjoyed hosting residents of Manor Park on campus, said Trinity School Director of Fine Arts, Paige Gates. The mission of the Glass Hopper coincides with the mission of the school and aims to enrich lives with glass blowing through outreach and education. With demonstrations like these, we are well on our way to achieving that goal. After the glass blowing demonstration, the residents of Manor Park were presented with scenes and songs from the upper school production of Little Women, the Broadway musical. The musical wrapped up performances this past weekend at the Yucca Theater, and students were excited to be able to perform scenes from the show one last time. The upper school students worked so hard in preparing for this production, and it was a pleasure sharing this treasured story with the residents of Manor Park, said middle and upper school music teacher Casey Thissen. UTPB ranks for best value. By J.C. Lewis. The University of Texas Permian Basin recently made the optimal choice list for best value colleges by the Grand Reports team. UTPB is ranked as the third school for lowest tuition with an annual tuition of $6,666. The school also scored 76.33 for salary score, which is an overall score out of 100 calculated based on the median alumni salary for each program at this school compared to the median annual alumni salary for the same program at other schools. Data is sourced from the U.S. Department of Education's College Scorecard, according to the press release. The university also has the lowest tuition of the three optimal choice schools on the list representing the University of Texas system and has strong salary scores in several bachelor's programs, including engineering, human development, and family studies, English, sociology, and psychology. More than 85% of the colleges that earned the optimal choice accolade are public universities. Read the full report and what other schools were included on the list at www.gradereports.com.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, November 21st. Opinion, letters to the editor. Democrats are an embarrassment, Sandy Milner, Odessa, writes. I wonder if it's even possible that the Democrats could be any more dishonest, crooked, embarrassing, or hypocritical. Eric Swalwell had an affair with a Chinese spy. Dianne Feinstein had a Chinese spy for her chauffeur for about 20 years. Kamala Harris had an affair with the mayor of San Francisco when he was married to get her start in politics. Adam Schiff claimed to have evidence of Trump's collusion with Russia, but never brought it out, so obviously he was lying. And last but not least, Joe Biden has been on both sides of everything he has mentioned. First, he was against masks. Then he was in favor of them. He also said specifically that there would be no vaccination mandate, then turned around and declared a mandate for all federal employees and all private businesses with more than 100 employees. And of course, neither he nor the government has any authority, either by law or by the Constitution, to compel anyone to take any kind of medicine for anything. Then, to top everything off, he poops his pants while visiting the Pope, and then farts loud and long and impossible to ignore while talking with Prince Charles' wife, Camilla. Proves that he is not only incompetent, but also incontinent. And that's to say nothing of all the verbal gaps he has made, or the numerous times he has literally lost his train of thought while making a speech. Even with the help of teleprompters and earpieces, he can't string together a coherent thought. If the Democrats had intentionally tried to find a stupider president, they couldn't have done better than Biden. Between a rock and a hard place, Jeff Russell, Odessa, writes, President Joe Biden's agenda continues to wreak havoc on our country. The latest casualty appears to be Medical Center Hospital, where this week the MCH board voted 4-3 to impose a vaccine mandate on all employees due to demands placed on the hospital by CMS, the federal agency that makes Medicare Medicaid payments to hospitals. In short, CMS is mandating that local hospitals either ensure 100% vaccination of all staff members, the MCH board, and any hospital volunteers, or they will cut all CMS funding. After a lengthy debate Tuesday night, the MCH board voted to impose a vaccine mandate with trustees Bryn Dodd, Wallace Dunn, and Kathy Rhodes voting against the mandate, while trustees Don Hallmark, Richard Herrera, David Dunn, and Mary Lou Anderson voted to impose the mandate. Trustees were faced with two basic options. One, to require all employees to be vaccinated and to risk losing as much as 30% of the already stretched thin MCH staff who are refusing to get vaccinated, or two, refuse to be forced into an employee vaccine mandate and risk losing up to $200 million in CMS payments. A rock and a hard place for sure. However, when faced with such a difficult decision, I would encourage MCH board members to simply do the right thing and protect each person's constitutional and God-given right to decide for themselves what to inject into their body. Certainly, one of the most troubling aspects of the never-ending pandemic has been the wholesale destruction of our constitutional rights in the name of public health and safety. Beginning with mask mandates and now on to vaccine mandates, the list of government-imposed demands on American citizens seems sure not to stop, but to continue to move forward in ever more disturbing ways. For example, it isn't inconceivable to imagine a future where our government, like the Chinese, mandates limits on family size, claiming a crisis in global warming or limitations in food production or some other real or imagined crisis. It is important to realize that our wonderful Constitution doesn't yield its protections to crisis, real or contrived, but was designed to protect our rights during a crisis. A rock and a hard place for sure, but in the face of difficult decisions, true leaders will choose the option that best protects our constitutional rights, and this should make it easy for the MCH board to choose to stand up and fight CMS instead of rolling over and placing a financial six-shooter to the temple of their employees by demanding vaccination or termination.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, November 20th, 2021. How much do residents want green spaces? A commentary by Stuart Doreen. Be careful what you wish for. You might just get it. That is my recommendation for those living at Grassland Estates and Grassland Estates West. Because while the Midland City Council unanimously looked down on you favorably this time, they also started the clock for those who think they have a solution for what should be done with the land in Northwest Midland that includes Nueva Vista Golf Course. You see, there is a nonprofit ready to raise the money to purchase the land. For Midland has visions of turning that land, which includes 18 holes of golf, decent views, the possibility of miles of trails, fishing, and more, into a space that Midland doesn't have and probably couldn't replicate. I think there are possibilities there, but the land will cost a pretty penny, and it should. I credit Autumn Winkles and her board at 4 Midland. Their path from being concerned homeowners to philanthropists/activists isn't an easy one to travel. They also know that they're not working on an ideal timeline. They probably have 6 months. My guess is that developers, if they really want to put housing on that golf course, will come back to the city as early as May and present a site plan without the sheer density of housing. They will put more larger lots and less smaller lots. There might be some townhouses or garden homes, but the largest number of homes will be those comparable to the houses that exist at the Grasslands developments. And should that scenario play out, the council will consider it responsible development and approve it. If it gets to that point, it really doesn't matter what visions some may have for that property. So the clock is ticking. My guess is Winkles isn't wasting time. She said this week it would be ideal to provide an offer to the landowner by the end of the year. That is an aggressive timeline, but she also knows that it is better to get the landowner's attention with a serious offer earlier than wait around for month 5 or 6. That's when Grassland residents would receive notices in the mail of another development planned for that acreage. Right now, there appears to be a movement in Midland for these partnerships that make a community a better place. We've seen it work to fruition with Centennial Park. We're seeing it happen with Hogan Park. Are the resources there for a third at Nueva Vista? Can people see the vision that Winkles has for not just her neighborhood, but a community? Ultimately, that is what must happen if 4 Midland is going to be successful. Again, the green space and quality of life measures really matter to Midlanders. It is hard to imagine a better canvas than the acreage that includes Nueva Vista. In my mind, it doesn't matter if another round of golf is played there, which is good because I expect the golf course will eat up any project cost or annual budget that the nonprofit comes up with. Still, there are opportunities for a project that can be as transformative to the community as Centennial Park was to downtown. It won't be easy, and yes, the clock is ticking.
This is The Nation from the front page. This article is entitled, COVID Vaccines for Children Help Stop Dangerous Variants, by Laura Unger, AP medical writer. Louisville, Kentucky. Cadell Walker rushed to get her 9-year-old daughter Salome vaccinated against COVID-19, not just to protect her, but to help stop the coronavirus from spreading and spawning even more dangerous variants. Love thy neighbor is something that we really do believe, and we want to be good community members and want to model that thinking for our daughter, said the 40-year-old Louisville mom who recently took Salome to a local middle school for her shot. The only way to really beat COVID is for all of us collectively to work together for the greater good. Scientists agree. Each infection, whether in an adult in Yemen or a kid in Kentucky, gives the virus another opportunity to mutate. Protecting a new, large chunk of the population anywhere in the world limits those opportunities. That effort got a lift with 28 million U.S. kids 5 to 11 years old now eligible for a child-sized doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Moves elsewhere, like Austria's recent decision to require all adults to be vaccinated, and even the U.S. authorizing booster shots for all adults on Friday, help by further reducing the chances of new infection. Vaccinating kids also means reducing silent spread, since most have no or mild symptoms when they contract the virus. When the virus spreads unseen, scientists say it also goes unabated. As more people contract it, the odds of new variants rise. Researchers disagree on how much kids have influenced the course of the pandemic. Early research suggested they didn't contribute much to viral spread, but some experts say children played a significant role this year, spreading contagious variants such as Alpha and Delta. Getting kids vaccinated could make a real difference going forward, according to estimates by the COVID-19 Scenario Modeling Hub, a collection of university and medical research organizations that consolidates models of how the pandemic may unfold. The Hub's latest estimates show that for this November through March 12, 2022, vaccinating 5 to 11-year-olds would avert about 430,000 COVID cases in the overall U.S. population if no new variant arose. If a variant 50% more transmissible than Delta showed up in late fall, 860,000 cases would be averted, a big impact, said project co-leader Katrina Shea of Pennsylvania State University. Delta remains dominant for now, accounting for more than 99% of analyzed coronavirus specimens in the United States. Scientists aren't exactly sure why. Dr. Stuart Campbell-Gray, an infectious disease expert at Johns Hopkins University, said it may be intrinsically more infectious, or it may be invading, at least in part, the protection people get from vaccines or having been infected before. It's probably a combination of those things, he said. But there's also very good and growing evidence that Delta is simply more fit, meaning that it's able to grow to higher levels faster than other variants that are studied. So when people get Delta, they become infectious sooner. Ray said Delta is a big family of viruses, and the world is now swimming in a sort of Delta soup. We have many lineages of Delta that are circulating in many places with no clear winners, Ray said, adding that it's hard to know from genetic features which might have an edge or which non-Delta variants might dethrone Delta. I often say it's like seeing a car parked on the side of the road with racing slicks and racing stripes and an airfoil on the back and a big engine, Ray said. You know, it looks like it could be a real contender, but until you see it on the track with other cars, you don't know if it's going to win.
Protecting America's veterans from conniving con artists. BBB, Heather Massey. Before President Eisenhower's proclamation establishing Veterans Day in 1954, November 11th was known as Armistice Day, a celebration acknowledging the end of fighting during World War I, at 11 a.m. on November 11th, 1918, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. In recognition of the sacrifices and honor due to military veterans, official ceremonies take place in the Memorial Amphitheater, built around the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, on November 11th at 11 a.m., with the laying of a presidential wreath, often directly from the hands of the sitting U.S. president. Approximately 7% of the adult population are veterans of the U.S. Armed Forces, ranging from 18 to over 100 years old, and served in various conflicts such as the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Global War on Terrorism, and World War II. Many men and women who served in the military find the transition to civilian life after service mentally, emotionally, and physically challenging. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs states that common challenges U.S. veterans face when re-entering the civilian sector include joining or creating a community, creating structure, relating to people who do not know or understand what military personnel has experienced, adjusting to a different pace of life or work. In addition to these challenges, the military community also must defend themselves against predatory business tactics, con artists, and government imposters. According to the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, veterans and military retirees have lost more than $290 million to fraud, with a median loss of $700, since 2017. Approximately 29% of reports submitted to the FTC are regarding instances of government imposter scams, which also account for the most money lost, $33.5 million. According to data generated by BBB Scam Tracker, Texas veterans have reported more than $407,000 lost to scams across the Lone Star State since January 2021. The most common scams impacting Texas veterans this year are online purchasing scams, accounts for 29% of reports totaling nearly $40,000 lost. Phishing scams accounts for 16% of reports totaling over $26,000 lost. Employment scams accounts for 8% of reports totaling over $37,000 lost. While not as common at only 1.7% of reports, utility scams have cost Texas veterans over $48,000 in losses, specifically from con artists claiming to represent solar energy companies. To help protect Texas veterans from falling victims to scams, BBB provides the following tips. Do your research. The first line of defense is often the strongest. Spend the time to research a company before purchasing their services or goods. Review business profiles on BBB.org and check government websites if the service is required to be licensed, such as interstate moving companies or companies using pesticides. Avoid aggressive selling tactics. Companies and businesses that pressure consumers to immediately contract their services without allowing time to obtain quotes or estimates from competitors should be handled cautiously. While companies must follow up with potential customers and clients to achieve success, aggressive selling tactics may signify that the company is not invested in the consumer's interests. Beware emotional appeals. Exercise care when engaging with business that use targeted emotional reactions to entice donations or contributions from consumers. Consumers should focus on what an organization is doing to address an issue with an emotional appeal, not just the fact it exists. For example, donations to assist homeless veterans are very popular surrounding the Veterans Day holiday. However, it should be apparent what the organization is doing to impact homeless veterans and its effect. Consumers can use BBB's Wise Giving Alliance to find a list of accredited charities on give.org. Never wire money to strangers. Money that is sent via wire transfer is extremely difficult to track and nearly impossible to have reimbursed. BBB recommends using a credit card for online purchases whenever possible. Charges on credit cards are easier to dispute and be refunded when engaging with a business that does not provide the purchased service or goods.
Do acid reflux meds become ineffective? Dear Dr. Roach, I usually have mild symptoms of acid reflux, but my specialist said it was somewhat useless to take omeprazole or famotidine because over time they become ineffective. My brother-in-law takes a pill every day and has for years. My doctor supports occasional use only. What do you say, please, R.O.? Answer, many people have occasional symptoms of acid reflux, also called GERD. The most common symptoms is heartburn, but cough, wheezing, and voice change are other symptoms. I also advise occasional use, but that's because most people's symptoms are occasional, and I'd rather people not take more medication than they need. Omeprazole, a type of medication called a proton pump inhibitor, takes a few days to begin working most effectively, so it should not be taken on as needed basis. I usually prescribe a 6-week course. Famotidine is in a different class called H2 blockers, which start working right away and are a good choice for occasional symptoms. Some people absolutely need long-term treatment, such as people with Barrett's esophagus a complication of long-standing reflux. A medicine like omeprazole remains effective in long-term use.
This is the Dear Abby column. Man gets descriptive when identifying women. Dear Abby, when my boyfriend talks about women, he doesn't always refer to them by their name. In most cases, I don't know the individual, but even if he does refer to her by name, what bothers me is he always follows it by describing her boobs, i.e. the one with the big boobs. She has got to be at least a 42D. They stick straight out. Or, she's petite with a very small waistline. Yet he says he loves my figure and always expresses he loves the way I'm built. I have ignored the big boob comments because I'm guessing he gets some kind of satisfaction from making them, so I have gone along with it. However, it is becoming increasingly annoying. How can I get him to stop these comments and either refer to the women by name, or Jerry's wife, or the woman, or the lady? Frankly, I'm not interested in the description. Her name will suffice. Also, can you explain why he always slips in the description of a woman's anatomy? Signed, More Than a Body. Dear Moore, a direct way to get your boyfriend to cut it out would be to tell him in plain English that the graphic description of these women's anatomy is a huge turnoff. As to your second question, your boyfriend does it because this is how he classifies the females he meets. He does not view them as individuals. He identifies them according to their anatomy. Dear Abby, on two occasions I have given my girlfriend money, several thousand dollars, to help her cover medical expenses. Both times her father promised to pay me back. He made good on his promise the first time, but it has been almost 2 months since I fronted the money and he hasn't paid me back. He promised to do it when he got paid, but he has gotten paid several times since. I'm considering taking him to small claims court. It wouldn't be his first time in that situation. Am I cheap, or am I right for wanting to be repaid? If I'm right, how should I proceed? Signed, Unpaid in Pennsylvania. Dear Unpaid, you were kind to front the money for your girlfriend's medical treatment. Her father should not have promised to repay you if he didn't intend to follow through. Contact him again and see if you can't agree on a payment plan that will be easier for him than paying you a lump sum. But if that doesn't work, I hope you got the promise he made in writing. If you didn't and you take him to small claims court, you will have no proof to show a judge. That said, if you do have something in writing, proceed by contacting the county clerk in the small claims court district closest to where her father lives. Fill out a statement of claim form at the clerk's office and pay the filing fee. I wish you luck. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.